This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The droughts, the floods, the hurricanes, the heat waves at this scale, they're unparalleled, and it's really difficult to deal with that which you've never seen before.
That was Mercy Corps Claudine Wakasa at Kenya's Climate Summit. Details coming up. Also, the Economic Community of Central African States has suspended Gabon's membership. And Algeria has outlined a political initiative to solve the crisis in Niger. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with a top story. Kenya's President William Ruto says climate change is relentlessly eating away at Africa's economic progress, and leaders need to engage in a global dialogue about a carbon tax on polluters. Ruto was speaking on day two of Africa's first climate summit. Claudine Wakasa, Mercy Corps Global Director of Advisory on Energy, is attending the summit. She tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that unprecedented droughts and catastrophic floods are the new stark reality of climate change, and leaders must come up with long-term solutions that include investment in renewable energy.
The climate crisis is intensifying, and we're seeing that Africa as a region is highly, highly vulnerable to its unforgiving nature. And there are very many factors that contribute to this, one of which is the weather events we're witnessing are unprecedented. The droughts, the floods, the hurricanes, the heat waves at this scale, they're unparalleled, and it's really difficult to deal with that which you've never seen before. So, for instance, I know in East Africa, we've had five consecutive droughts in a decade, and each is intensifying. I think the last one we saw a 70% increase in comparison to past droughts. And that's even before we talk about the floods in DRC and Cyclone Freddy in Malawi and Mozambique. So, of course, you know, there are other factors that make us vulnerable outside of this, the novelty of these weather episodes, and some of them being that we are very dependent on agriculture, and particularly rain-fed agriculture. And then we also see factors such as, you know, water insecurity. We have a majority of water insecure countries in the world, and then we have conflicts and migration, and, you know, it goes on and on and on. And we need to think of how we frame solutions in a way that is really capturing the fact that they are occurring in multiple places, and how can we learn from all those experiences.
Mercy Corps has called on leaders to prioritize investments in long-term solutions. Talk about some of those long-term solutions.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's more about how are you transforming the community that you're working with, right? So it's not really being more responsive, like quick responses, short-term fixes to some of the crises we're seeing. So there are a lot of interventions that come in, deal with the incident that's happening and exit. But it's really trying to think more holistically. What has caused this? How do we build the resilience and the capacity of that community to deal with it in the future? And how do we then make sure we're able to exit and leave them a lot stronger than how we found them?
And what are those ideas? How do you make it so that it's not something that comes up every year or two? Obviously, renewable energy, but what are some other ideas for the long-term solutions?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's one, we have a market-based approach to how we do a lot of our development work. So it's thinking about, you know, when you enter a community, you're there for a set period of time, let's say 5 years being the minimum. How then are you building the capacity of that community? How are you investing in understanding some of their key economic activities? How are you strengthening that as opposed to coming with a completely novel idea that maybe doesn't suit them very well? That's one way of doing it. The second is understanding what are the catalytic factors that can help build resilience. And that's where this huge focus on energy is coming, because we recognize that access to energy can transform. It can help with adaptation, it can help with mitigation activities. So how are we introducing that in a way that makes sense to those communities we serve? A huge majority of Africans are involved in the agriculture sector. The challenge they're facing around that is drought and water scarcity issues. One of the interventions that is really, really proving effective is the introduction of solar irrigation systems, because then they're able to continue to water their plants within a drought, and to do so using renewable energy sources, which means they're not reliant on you know, a power line or anything else. They're acting fairly independently.
That's Claudine Wakasa, Mercy Corps Global Director on Energy. She was speaking to my colleague Carol Van Dam from the Africa Climate Summit in Nairobi, Kenya. Climate change scholars say African-driven solutions are needed to address the effects of climate change on the continent. At the University of Southern California Annenberg Center in Washington, D.C., experts from the United States and Africa recently met to begin finding those solutions. VOA's Anthony Labruto has more.
As the effects of climate change strengthen, the question of who pays for solutions drives the conversation. Those most responsible for it are those who suffer the most. World leaders grapple with the issue, as it becomes clear some nations feel climate change significantly more than others. Charles Ray is a former United States ambassador to Zimbabwe and an African policy analyst.
Even though Africa is about 16% of the world's population, it accounts for a single-digit percentage of carbon emissions annually, but the continent suffers more than any other populated continent on the planet from the impacts of climate change.
Policy analysts such as Ray, climate change scholars, and other experts met recently in Washington to discuss what can be done to mitigate the already present effects of climate change on the African continent. One topic in particular dominated the discussions: how to encourage developing countries to advocate and tap into resources that are already available. Adam Clayton Powell III is the director of the University of Southern California's Annenberg Center, the host of the climate gathering. He says bridging U.S. investment and African resources is key to reducing the effects of an ever-changing climate.
We have a network of experts, of corporate leaders, of educators, of civil society that is growing. We only began this year. And we already have grown far more than we ever expected.
Primrose Karasha, a climate policy writer and international lawyer, thinks Western countries should listen to the concerns of those affected by climate change and by the need to provide clean energy.
Is energy available? Is it available to be distributed? If not, clearly you have a hurdle that you have to overcome, that you have to jump to convince the people that energy transition is a priority, whilst at the same time trying to make them understand that what you're facing is not any other drought, is not any other flood like you first faced in the early 90s or 80s when I was growing up. This is something that is there to stay, if not attended to.
Ray says developed countries should take an adaptive approach to climate change solutions for the African continent, rather than trying to push climate solutions that are Western originated.
We should not define Africa's problems for Africa. They should define their problems, and ultimately they should define their solutions. What we should do is look for a way to help facilitate African solutions to African problems.
The Africa's Future Forum series will continue hosting scholars and policymakers for monthly meetings throughout the rest of this year. Anthony Labruto, VOA News, Washington.
International news media today report France's army is holding talks with counterparts in Niger about making it easier to move French military resources in the country. About 1,500 French troops are in Niger as part of its fight against militants in the Sahel region. The French news agency AFP says military sources did not reveal the sort of troop movements being discussed and that they did not mention withdrawing the troops. Niger's military-appointed Prime Minister Ali Mahaman Lamine Zeni said yesterday that contacts were underway about a very swift departure for French troops. Thousands of people have protested outside the French military base in Niger, demanding the troops leave the country. Algeria has outlined a political initiative to solve the crisis in Niger. Algerian Foreign Minister Ahmed Attaf visited Ghana, Nigeria, and Benin, then announced the six-point initiative that includes plans for a six-month transition period overseen by a widely accepted civilian figure followed by elections. Algeria also would seek a United Nations conference to restore constitutional order, propose guarantees for all sides, and host a conference on development in the Sahel region. William Lawrence, professor of international relations at the American University in Washington, discussed this initiative with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
The elements that would allow that to happen are not there at this time. It also gets back to what Algeria's motives are. Algeria is trying to stop a conflict that could involve as many as 20 countries, 11 members of ECOWAS plus their supporters against Niger and its four or five Putschist allies, maybe Russian mercenaries. That's a big conflict if it happens. Algeria is also trying to show that it has a better approach than what happened in Libya in 2011 and Mali in 2014. It's trying to assert a set of principles for international involvement in these types of situations. It's trying to secure its backyard. It has other reasons too, but it won't happen because the elements that would make it so Niger would accede to the Algerian approach aren't there. The U.S. position has been sort of ambiguous because it's both backing Algeria and backing ECOWAS, but Algeria and ECOWAS don't agree with each other. And then there's the issue that Algeria's solution isn't really sustainable, right? It's mostly about stopping a conflict, but it's not about giving the Nigerian people what they need, because it's emphasizing sovereignty and stability over democracy and freedom and the type of entrepreneurial developments that a lot of ECOWAS and higher trade, you know, the types of things that ECOWAS would like to do in a certain kind of way, in a certain type of free environment. So until what Algeria wants and ECOWAS wants are lined up, I don't think this approach will work.
Attaf also said that Algerian officials have spoken three times since the coup to the Niger military leader. The military council insists on a three-year transition and no regional or international actor involved in the crisis finds this acceptable. The military council has promised to look into the Algerian initiative and respond to it. Would that be the point on which domestic and regional parties meet, allowing everyone involved to save face?
In theory, yes, but they're not trying to save face yet, right? Because those elements that I described aren't there. If the Nigerian government did accept it, it would be to stop an invasion, and it might be to accept it for a time to delay an invasion. But the Algerians aren't talking to other elements within Niger, so it's not like we're moving towards a solution. What I see here is Algeria is trying to curry favor with the Putschists and simply talk about them negotiating their way out of power without applying any pressure on them. And Putschists are saying, look, we want to stay in power for 3 years, but they want to stay in power for 3 years without any crisis at hand. And of course, they could extend the 3 years at any time. So what they're signaling is this is about keeping power and exacting revenge on the French and French mining interests, that sort of thing, and riding a wave of popular resentment that they're stirring up to get and maintain power. So if you treat them as the only sovereigns, which is what the Algerians are doing so far, I don't think that will get things very far. Now, why is no one accepting what Putschists are saying? Well, a couple countries are, right? Burkina, Mali, Guinea, and maybe Gabon now. But we know, and all the other countries know, all the other countries in Africa and the African Union and around the world know that Putschist approach is not optimal and won't lead to the best long-term solution. So as I was saying earlier, as Algeria gets closer to ECOWAS, rather than condemning strongly but indirectly what ECOWAS is saying and doing, and instead viewing this through a certain post-colonial lens that basically says, you know, any outside action is bad, will mean that we're moving in a direction where local popular control becomes more important than local military control. And I'm just afraid the Algerians are too comfortable with local military control during the transitional period and even longer.
That was William Lawrence, professor of international relations at American University in Washington, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Nigerian security services are on high alert ahead of tomorrow's court ruling on the recent elections for president and state governors. The secret police warned that some groups are planning violent protests. Our reporter in Abuja has more.
Although Nigerian's secret police did not say who is planning violent protests, it says they are aimed at discrediting the government and the security agencies. The Presidential Election Tribunal in Abuja is expected to rule Wednesday on petitions contesting the election of President Bola Tinubu. The chairman of Partners for Electoral Reform, Ezenwanwago, tells VOA that elections are competitive and it is normal to expect protests from different quarters as the election tribunal gives its verdict.
It is the responsibility of the security agencies to maintain law and order and ensure that those who are happy do not, in trying to celebrate, become a nuisance or breach the law. And those who lost in their heart or in their vexation then become a threat to peace.
There has been alleged widespread irregularities and malpractice in the February 25th presidential election. The tribunal began hearings on challenges to the election in June. Tijani Abdulkareem is the executive director of the Social Economic Research and Development Center, a non-governmental organization working to strengthen socio-economic development and democratic governance in Nigeria.
Just like any other Nigerian, I'm quite confident that the judiciary will do the needful. We have had cases where we felt that the judiciary want to be intimidated. And we have raised concern as a member of the transition monitoring groups. We want to believe that the judiciary will come out and give the right judgment that is in line with the people's beliefs on this election.
Tinubu took office in May. Since then, he's initiated several reform policies, including cutting fuel subsidies, which has angered many people coping with rising inflation. Complicating security concerns around the election tribunal is a two-day strike by leading unions, which began today. Many government offices and other public facilities are closed. The Nigeria Labour Congress called the strike because it said the government has failed to ease the pain caused by ending the fuel subsidies. For VOA News from Abuja,
Ugandan police say they have arrested another five people and discovered five more handmade bombs around the capital Kampala in a bombing plot linked to an Islamist rebel group. Reuters reports that Ugandan authorities detained a suspect linked to the DRC-based Allied Democratic Forces with a bomb in a bag outside a packed church on Sunday. The arrest triggered a manhunt that led to a further five arrests and the discovery of five more improvised explosive devices, according to police reports. The bombs were safety detonated and items including nails, batteries and powder detonators were recovered. The police said a threat environment still exists, which calls for vigilance as Ugandans go shopping, traveling at places of worship, partying and celebrating for any suspicious objects, unusual activity or behavior. The Economic Community of Central African States, ECOWAS, has suspended Gabon's membership during an extraordinary summit in Gibelo, Equatorial Guinea, and condemned the use of force to resolve political conflicts. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon, that 1 week after a coup ousted Gabon's president Ali Bongo, nothing much is being said about him, and he hasn't been seen since a video in which he was pleading for international help.
Heads of states and governments in the Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, say they condemned the use of force to resolve political conflicts in Gabon. Monday's extraordinary summit in Gibraho, Equatorial Guinea, was held under the presidency of Equatorial Guinea President Teodoro Obiang-Nguema Mbasogo. Obiang said ECAS wants Gabon to return to constitutional order following a coup so that all the institutions in the country can function. ECAS says it expects the international and regional community to help Gabon out of difficult times, but gave no details. ECAS says Gabon was suspended from proceedings because of an unconstitutional power change. Chad's Foreign Affairs Minister, Mohamed Saleh Anadzif, read the summit's resolutions on Equatorial Guinea's national television.
Ils ont interpellé les militaires pour surtout garantir la sécurité.
He says ECAS leaders are asking the military junta in Gabon to guarantee the physical integrity, safety and security of ousted President Ali Bongo and his family. He says Gabon has an obligation under international law to protect all citizens and ensure a quick return to civilian rule. Anadif said the summit designated Central African Republic President Faustin Archange Touadéra to negotiate with Gabon's military junta to hand over power. Etienne Gola is an international affairs lecturer at the Omar Bongo University in Libreville.
Les conditions dans lesquelles ce coup d'état a été mené.
Gola says the coup in Gabon was one of the most peaceful in the world, with no bloodshed. He says ECAS should allow Gabon's military junta, which has much internal support, enough time to bring back order and prepare civilians for democratic rule before handing over power. Ngola spoke via a messaging app. Gabon's ousted president has not been seen in public since August 30, when a group of Gabon military officers appeared on national television and announced that they had seized power and put Bongo under house arrest. But an audio extract from a video of Ali Bongo has gone viral on social media platforms. In the video, Ali Bongo cries for help, asking people he calls his friends to come to his rescue. Shortly after the coup, Ali Bongo's son, 31-year-old Noureddin Bongo Valentin, was also arrested and accused of high treason and corruption. The military junta, led by General Brice Oligui Nguema, a former commander of the Republican Guard, who was sworn in on Monday as Gabon's transitional president, has not commented on his predecessor's family situation. The ECAS summit did not make any public statement of the arrest of Bongo's son. During the summit, Niger-born Abdou Abari, who is the special representative of United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres for Central Africa and head of the United Nations Regional Office for Central Africa, UNOCA, pleaded for the establishment of rules and strong institutions, he said, will consolidate Gabon's democratic foundations at the end of a transition within a reasonable time. Abari also expressed hope that ECAS and the Regional Office of Central Africa would equip themselves with what he called adequate instruments to deal with the resurgence of unconstitutional changes. During his swearing-in ceremony on Monday, he would hand over civilian rule, but did not say when. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Zainab Abdel Rahman, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.